This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're on remote. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and Laura Chauvin is with us. She is a children's book author, and she's unleashed a whole world of monsters in verse. And so, Laura, what is the name of your book, and what did you hope children would take from it?
The name of the book is Welcome to Monsterville. And I think when I started working on this project with my friend, the poet Michael Rothenberg, we weren't yet thinking about what we hoped children would take from it. And yet this was a project that we worked on together during the pandemic over Zoom and Facebook Messenger and many different methods. And so the hopes and worries and fears and anxieties of the pandemic, I think, are present in this book in the form of the monsters and the stories that they tell and what they express in the poems.
Let us begin by hearing a monster poem by Laura Chauvin.
I'm going to start with the first poem that I wrote for this book. So I had been in Tallahassee visiting Michael and his wife, Terry Carrion. And at the time, Michael had been unable to write for some time, and he was working with an art therapist. And most of the artwork which he showed me was very abstract. So when I got home from visiting, I was surprised to find this blue, purple-haired monster blowing green bubbles in my inbox. And I just had this feeling like, this monster has a story. So I wrote a poem, I recorded it, I sent it to Michael, and that's what I will read to you, the very first pairing that we did. It's called Neighbor. A monster bought the house next door. When it moved in, I wasn't sure how this strange being, round and tall, would squeeze in through a door so small. I stood on my front porch to stare at its six paws and slicked back hair. The suit it wore was denim blue. I said, "Those clothes look sharp on you." The monster turned, gave me a nod, and blew green bubbles, which seemed odd, but maybe that's how monsters say, "Hello, new friend. I'd like to play."
They're not
so
scary.
That was the start of it.
They're not scary.
Not all of them. They're maybe one or two a little scary, but no, they're not scary. It was very interesting. Michael talked about, he said that he was in a place at the time where defining what he was doing was really hard and not something he wanted to do. He just wanted to sort of confront the page and allow what came up to come up. And he felt that in the poems, I was interpreting, in a way, what he had been feeling that he was unable to express in words at the time, which was such a beautiful thing to say. And I see that in some of the poems.
Well, let us hear another, and then we want to talk more about Michael, who has gone.
Yes. Michael passed away in November of 2022. I think the one that speaks to this the most is a poem called When I Cry. And the image that Michael created is this large-headed monster on a small body with a backdrop of mountains. And it's got purple locks of hair flowing. But the most, the thing that stands out the most, the sort of the most metaphorical thing about this monster is it's got these three orange spiders crawling on its face. And that was what led me to this poem, was that being the central image. So it's called When I Cry. There is a monster in me called sadness. Its arms and legs ache. It is weary, as if it spent all night walking across steep mountains. There is a monster in me whose hair stretches from its head in tangled rivers, flowing fast like the thoughts that keep me awake. When I cry, monster weeps. Tears crawl on fuzzy legs down its cheeks. They tickle. Monster laughs until its teeth turn pink. Can I laugh too, even though I am sad? Yes, monster says. You are a weary, silly, laughing, weeping, wonderful creature.
Laura, talk about the process. This is really interesting. You got the visual first,
mm-hmm.
and then you interpreted it in poetry. I want everyone to know that you are an award-winning children's author, that first you were a regular poet like everybody else, and then you found verse for children. And your books are The Last Fifth Grade of Emerson, Takedown, Emerson Elementary, mm-hmm. Takedown, and then A Place at the Table. And we'll be talking more about your career. But talk about Michael and how, when he sent you a beautiful illustration, which I think Maurice Sendak would have appreciated, how you meditated into that to understand what it meant to you.
Oh, we had so many wonderful conversations during this project about the creative process. And this whole exercise really taught me to trust what was coming up. For the most part, most of the poems, the sort of the first impulse is what I followed. And I'm just thinking about Grace. There's an incredible article by an essayist and a teacher named Bonnie Friedman, and I think the title is "What Happens When My Novel Knows More Than I Do." And she talks about the images that come up for us that we tend to dismiss in our writing because they're too out there or too weird. And she advises writers to lean into those things and let them be, so that you can discover what is coming up from the subconscious or what your words are trying to tell you, and listen to those. And that was really part of the process here. I think there's a poem, I wasn't planning to read it, but there's a poem called Underground. And this one was really difficult to write. It took a couple of attempts, and Michael and I would go back and forth. The monster itself looks like a giant carrot who's been pulled up from the earth and whose legs are the roots with all the little tiny roots coming off. And this carrot has a sort of like a suit on and is holding flowers. And just what do I do with this? And the resulting poem.
Oh, we're going to have to hear
you're
it.
You're going to have to hear it. To me, this poem speaks to the experience of depression, but that was not what was on my mind at the time. I was really trying to solve the puzzle of this artwork and what its story was, what this creature's story was. But I'll read Underground, and you'll see what I mean. Underground. Underneath Monsterville, no one knows where, a root monster lives without sunshine or air. Only on nights with a purple blue moon does root monster rise up and hum a sweet tune. The flowers are waiting for root monster's whistle. They step out of bed, every tulip and thistle. Root monster sings as they waltz in the dew, because plants love to dance when the moon's purple blue. As dawn's golden fingers creep into the park, root monster leaves for his home in the dark. He hums a sweet song during long, lonely hours of purple blue moonlight and dancing with flowers. So for me, just that experience of depression and having those memories or experiences to hold on you that sustain you during times that feel dark. I didn't know that wasn't my intention to write about that. And it wasn't actually until after it was written and I had read it a few times and shared it with a few, you know, schools and things, that I realized what that poem was really about.
Well, then you have to hark back and explain just quickly who Michael was and why he was so sad.
Michael, oh my gosh. I met Michael maybe 2012. We met on the phone. He was an activist. And he and his wife, Terry Carrion, had co-founded during the Occupy Wall Street era, an organization called 100,000 Poets for Change. And they were encouraging poets around the globe to hold public events on a day in September and record them, so that all around the world, basically at the same time, these events were going on. And he just created such an incredible network of poets and community poets generally. There were a few academic poets, but they tended to be people who were bringing poetry into the community. So that's how we met. We became very friendly. over the years. And then I believe in 2019, Michael's only son, Cosmos, passed away due to addiction. And that's, you know, that's kind of a year out from that is where we started working on this book and when the pandemic happened.
But the miracle I can never get over is that something that starts in pain can be so transformed into beauty and light. I mean, if ever there's a miracle of transformation, this book is evidence of it.
Yeah, thank you for saying that.
I mean, Michael was in how much more can you fear and than losing your only child to something horrendous. And you too know grief. We all know grief. And so this book has many layers. And just give us one more poem before we dive deeper.
Okay. I think maybe one that's a little more fun. This is, to me, this is the poem that is the silliest, but kids really enjoy this poem. And it gives us an opportunity to talk about tantrums. Like when you have a tantrum, like how do you help the person who's having a tantrum? What helps you? So this monster is, his name is Bubblegum Head, which should give you an idea of the picture. Bubblegum Head. Bubblegum Head fell out of bed. I couldn't believe the rude things that he said. Bluey, Bagookie, Carumple, Dipthingle, Catamaplonic, Stabooty, Narwinkle. He was stuck to the rug by his chewy pink curds, all sticky and icky and gobbledy-blicky, shouting and spouting, "My hairdo is tricky." I wanted to help. I would have preferred if he'd cried and oh my'd. But his mouth opened wide. Fluey, Bagookie, Carumple, Dipthingle, Catamaplonic, Stabooty, Narwinkle. The noise filled the room like a flock of blackbirds. My ears are still ringing from Bubblegum's words.
The book is Welcome to Monsterville. And Laura Chavon is a longtime poet in the schools for the, I think it was Howard County.
Maryland State Arts Council.
Yeah. Or the State Arts Council.
Yeah.
And so also you're on the faculty of Vermont College of Fine Arts, Masters of Fine Arts program in writing for children and young adults. You know, this is a genre that didn't exist when I was, there were classic books, but this is a whole world now that has arrived. What is it like to occupy that world of other children's authors? It's a tribe, isn't it?
It sure is. And I feel that some of our best, at least in the United States, some of our best writers are writing for children and teens right now. You know, I think of Jason Reynolds and Laurie House Anderson and Meg Medina. They're just the literary quality and the stories that they tell. And also knowing, especially I feel like for middle grade, which is tends to be the 8 to 13 year old books for those kids, you know, you can't necessarily get away with being super literary unless it's in service of the story. Kids that age will not put up with flowery language unless you're telling them a good story, and they probably won't put up with it anyway. You know, you really, story is king when it comes to young readers. And so I think that, like I said, some of the writers I admire the most are writing for kids right now.
Well, let us have a story in the form of a monster.
Okay.
Laura Chavon.
I'm going to read one, and this one is probably the most, I hesitate to call it autobiographical, but this is the one that's pulled from my childhood more than any other poem in the book, and it's called Green Cave. Sometimes I get so mad, the feelings can't stay inside. Before I know what I'm doing, my feet run for the back door. I duck under the forsythia bush. In summer, the branches arch to make a cave exactly my size. Once I was under there poking in the dirt when two blue feet slipped under the leafy branches. A monstrous bird walked into my hiding spot. It opened its beak. The monster sang about being so angry that it feels like a million arrows are prickling your skin. Its wings beat to the song's rhythm like a soft, calm breath. Ever since then, when I'm so mad I can't stay inside, I go to the green cave and listen for the monster's song.
Laura Chavon, I love to think of you as a little girl. What did Laura Chavon read?
Oh my gosh, I just remember everything. I remember Wind in the Willows was a huge, I remember doing a project for Wind in the Willows in fourth or fifth grade. That was really magical for me. I loved the Alice books and the Eleanor Estes books, like, why am I forgetting the name of the dog? Ginger Pie, which I just reread recently. And then, you know, books like Little Women and Anne of Green Gables and those as well.
Yes. But what moment did you know that you wanted to be on the other side of the page?
And oh my gosh,
I know
this is
as
a
child,
story. This
but
is
I yearned as a child. I
yeah.
thought, why can they write it? Why do they have to, why can they put on a play and I have to just sit and clap? Why can they write a book? I always yearned to create it. When did you feel that?
I will say first, my third grade teacher, Mrs. Corey, I will never forget. I had read, I can't remember her name, Cherry something school nurse. Student nurse, remember those?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I read that and we had to do a book jacket. And Mrs. Corey said, Laura, your book jacket is professional. This could be on any book in the library. And I was just like, wow. I remember that moment of her encouragement. But really, the moment for me was I read in middle school my mother's favorite book, which is Jane Eyre. And I just had a moment. There's a scene where Jane has left Thornfield and Mr. Rochester, and she's wandering through the moors aimlessly. She doesn't know where she's going to go. She's hungry. It's raining. And I was so wrapped up in the moment that I remember the feeling of looking up and looking out the window. And, you know, in my backyard, it was this beautiful spring day, and my brothers were out there playing. And that was when I experienced my first real moment of being transported. And that's when I really understood the power of the word.
You know, that is very significant. And I wish to say that there is always one teacher who hands us the baton. So let's hear another poem.
Okay. I said there was one that's a little bit scary. And I really love this poem, because it makes me think, when I wrote this one, Michael said, Laura, you are weird. And I said, Michael, you drew the pictures. Anyway, it's called Freedom. A strange new breed of rooster lives in our chicken coop. The birds wear collared shirts and gel their feathers in a swoop. The ties around their necks are hissing snakes. It's disconcerting. They run around and peck the ground and scare the hens by blurting, Duckaboodle coo, buckadoodle key, we're not roosters, set us free. A weird new breed of rooster lives in our chicken coop. They find a shady spot and gather huddled in a group. Their almost human eyes are watching me. I'm petrified. They point their wings and whisper things. That's when I run inside. Duckaboodle coo, buckadoodle key, we are monsters, set us free. We have an empty yard now. There's no more chicken coop. No sign of feathered monsters when I sit on the back stoop. They picked the lock, opened the gate, and fled one moonless night, but not without a final shout, which gave me quite a fright. Dockaboodle coo, buckadoodle key. Let's go, monsters. We are free.
Laura, what schools have you been in with these poems?
Oh, gosh. The most recently, I was at a school virtually in the Florida Panhandle. And what I tend to do, especially with the younger ones, is we read a few poems, or if they've read them already, they tell me which ones they love, always Bubblegum Head. And we doodle together. So we use Michael's art for inspiration. I have a great big pad and I start doodling and they tell me what to add to the monster. But also they have a doodle sheet that they work with. What I found, especially for the elementary schoolers, is that they have to go through Michael's process. They have to put the monster on the page first and then identify what the monster is feeling and then write about it. Trying to write first, it just didn't work as well.
That is so interesting. And you discovered this by yourself. But when you read a poem, and you have been giving readings in schools, are they delighted? Are they engaged? Do you get the response you want?
Yeah, I think they are. I think the most interesting conversations I've had with kids have to do with the poem Green Cave, because we talk about how do we self-soothe? You know, when we're feeling a certain way and our feelings are bigger than we can handle, what are the things that we do to self-soothe? And I've had so many wonderful responses, but I feel like these aren't always conversations that we have in school. And I know a lot of that has shifted since the pandemic, that teachers are doing a lot of work with kids on social emotional learning. But I've found that these poems and pictures are a great way to have a conversation starter with kids about their emotional selves, who they are, how they feel, how they handle their emotions.
You know, Laura, it's going to sound cliched, but thank you for your service. Really. I want to say that you are already an award-winning poet in your own right, and your chapbook, Mountain Log, Salt and Stone, won the inaugural Harris Poetry Prize. And you have been in many journals and anthologies for children and adults. So let us hear one more poem before I want to ask you this. How do you determine the age group, or don't you think that way? I know you say, like in children's television, where I was, we said 8 to 12.
Right.
But we didn't really know. And when we found a program that was 12, we found out that younger children liked it. There's really no norm. And for your books, they could be read aloud books from infancy. Then children can read them themselves. Mm-hmm. But how do you gauge that reading group?
It's complicated, and I tend to write for upper middle grade, which would be, you know, third, maybe fourth grade and up through middle school. So that's the age I typically write for. A book like this one could really be read to any age. A lot of picture books, you know, there are read aloud picture books, and then there are picture story books where an older child who's acquiring reading, you know, begin to read to themselves. So, you know, I think that that's part of what the work that I do as an educator.
It's a flowing process. I mean,
it is
really, it's not rigid at all. Because also, you and I probably read advanced, you know, as children because we love language.
Right.
So you can't really categorize everything, can you? But we can have another poem.
Okay. I'm going to read The Monster of Costa Voblink. And I think this Michael was very interested in Buddhist traditions. And I'm going to forget. He was the executor of poet and Buddhist monk Philip Whalen's estate. He cared for Philip Whalen toward the end of his life. And I think that shows up in some of the images, and it showed up also in some ways in this poem. The Monster of Costa Voblink. High on a mountain called Costa Voblink, there lives a shy monster who knows how to shrink. Disguising herself as a round speckled pebble, she holds in her breath and tries not to tremble when humans pass by on their bikes, in their cars, hiking and shouting, ignoring the stars. She waits till they're gone, then with a soft sigh, she grows herself huge and opens one eye. High on a mountain called Costa Voblink, a monster needs quiet and starlight to think.
This is the book to get your children, and it will be their next favorite because I have to say, the last fifth grade of Emerson Elementary is, to me, broke all ground in children's literature. This is very different,
Thank
very
you,
engaging,
Grace.
but it is, I felt it made a new level of thinking about story, about character, about situation for children. And it was so real, you really thought this school existed. So, Laura Chavon, and a closing poem.
Okay, let's see. I think I'll read the last one. And when I saw this image, I felt it's a kind of an angelic monster. It has eyes closed and beautiful pink wings. And I just felt that this illustration was a tribute to Michael's son Cosmos. And that's what I was thinking of when I wrote the poem Dream. Dream. Close your eyes and dream you are monstrous. Blue as summer sky, feathers cotton candy pink. Stretch your wings wide. A cloud is beneath you. Fly far above your house. The moon is close tonight. Its light blesses you, oh monster child.
That is the voice of Laura Chavon, and this is the poet and the poem from the Library of Congress. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. Funding is provided by the Sinipet Fund, Rivada Foundation, the Song in the Room Women's Group, and Sandy Jackson Cohen, the Maryland State Arts Council. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Mike Turpin is our engineer.